Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Another great week for the Milwaukee Brewers on the field. 4 wins and 6 tries. They finish off a great road trip, 10-game road trip, where they went 8-2, and then they went 2-3 against the Washington Nationals. Things pretty good. There are a couple caveats in there. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast, and on the other line is Todd Rosiak. We haven't talked to Todd in a month, I think, Todd. So welcome back to the podcast. We have missed you. What life changes have you experienced since you've been gone? You've gotten to see Giannis, right? You guys are friends now, is my understanding.
Yeah, he and I went out for a little coffee after the announcement on Friday, and we talked about Jim Ozarski and Ben Steele and Lori Nickel and how I was his favorite beat writer, since I am now a beat writer for him, since he's a part owner of the Brewers. No, actually, let's see, what did happen since the last time I talked to you? I covered 2 doubleheaders in 1 week. That wasn't a lot of fun.
You're not in the Ernie Banks camp of Let's Play 2. That's not your thing.
No, the only upside to those doubleheaders for me was the fact they were 7-inning games, which I'm a big fan of course. And any baseball writer, I think, will agree. And then the runner starting on second base and extra inning games, you know, just moves things along a little bit. But that doubleheader in Chicago was a 14-hour day on a nice 95-degree day, 107-degree heat index in a press box with closed windows and no air conditioning. So imagine how much fun that would be.
It was spicy. I believe the word Schwitz that people say when the roof is closed on a hot day, yeah. like this week.
Yeah, that was definitely the case. I could not jump in the shower fast enough after I got home that night. But those are beat writer problems. Nobody wants to hear a guy complain about that kind of stuff. So that's pretty much all I got. Let's get going and fire away.
Yeah, the Brewers did sweep that doubleheader against the Cubs, part of a 4-game sweep, the first 4-game sweep against the Cubs in Brewers history. That was last week. And then they take 2 of 3 from the Cardinals to open this week. And after dropping the first game back at home against the Washington Nationals, they win on Saturday and Sunday. We're going to talk about those games. And kind of we'll start, I guess, on a down note, because what happened on Sunday is the Brewers won, which is the good news. The bad news, Eduardo Escobar, their big midseason acquisition, third baseman/first baseman, leaves the game with what is a hamstring. They call it hamstring discomfort, but looks like it's the type of thing that's going to keep him out for a while. He's obviously been a big addition to the lineup, and losing him for, you know, these injuries usually aren't just a few days, or usually not even just 10 days. It's more like a month when a guy goes out with a hamstring injury. Brewers have had a couple guys fit that bill already this year, and it took a while to get back. So that's a pretty bad loss. Add that to this week where Tyrone Taylor was lost with an oblique injury earlier in the weekend, and then Freddie Peralta, who probably, I think, is going to be back on his normal spot. He had some shoulder discomfort, which is very scary, considering he's one of the pitchers. They've had injuries all year, but it hasn't hit that big three on the pitching staff, and then it kind of did. And maybe he's back, but still, that's alarming. Throw in Escobar. I think the Brewers probably have the manpower to get through all of this stuff. They're in great shape in the standings and all that, but I don't know, Todd, you see these injuries. This was a tough little weekend for the Brewers on that front. You feel like the Brewers, though, have everything in line to sort of move past it and get through this?
I mean, if there's ever been a team in recent memory, a Brewers team that's been able to fight past injuries and you know, issues like that, it's been the Brewers this season, who you know, we keep giving Mike Vassallo a hard time about. They had to add a whole different extra sheet on the notes packet that they print out each day, the pregame notes, because of how long the injured list has been since the start of the season. It's kind of unprecedented from that category. And then you add in the fact that the Brewers have now set a franchise record for number of players suited up in a year, and it's been pretty crazy. I guess just starting chronologically with Freddie Peralta, we talked to him today just for a brief minute before he went in before the game, and he was all smiles, had a good session of catch. And Craig Counsell said after the game that it was a positive step for him. So, you know, again, it's always hard to put firm timetables on these things, but they said from the outset that it didn't look like it was going to be anything overly serious and anything that was going to keep him out of action for an extended period of time. And that certainly looks like it's going to be the case. So, positive there. And then, from a pitching standpoint, obviously he's one of the guys that you can least afford to lose. So that's a positive. The Tyrone Taylor injury that cropped up on Friday in Friday's game, he won't be so fortunate. He's going to be out about a month, it sounds like, with the oblique that he strained on a swing. That's another one of those injuries that just seems like they crop up in bunches. So hopefully for the Brewers' sake, they don't have any more here coming up. But one of those things that's just kind of a very nebulous injury and really does not get better unless you just completely rest it. And obviously this time of year is not a good, it's not a good time when you really need all hands on deck to make this push down the stretch. So they're going to lose a valuable reserve in Tyrone Taylor and also a right-handed bat from their outfield, which is going to be a big loss. And then finally today, like you mentioned, Eduardo Escobar pulled a hamstring. Well, assuming we are assuming he pulled a hamstring trying to run out a ground ball there midway through the game. Came off the field very slowly. Craig Counsell said after the game was that he was going to get an MRI tonight, Sunday night. We probably will not get an update on him until Tuesday since there's an off day on Monday. Again, timing-wise, not the greatest with the Cincinnati Reds coming into town on Tuesday for what's going to be a really big three-game series. They knew with Tyrone Taylor, Craig Counsell said right off the bat before he'd even gotten an MRI on Friday that he was going to be out for a month. He didn't come out and say that right away, so I guess there's still, some sort of hope that maybe it's like a 10-day type deal or something like that. There is precedent for that. Like we think back to the obliques that Colton Wong had, where they healed fairly quickly. So we don't know. Certainly didn't look to be as bad as the one that Daniel Vogelback had in Arizona in June. That's basically still got him out now. So I guess a long-winded way of saying that we're just gonna have to wait and see, but looks like he definitely will wind up on the IL just for the amount of time we don't know. But as far as position players go, he's been very valuable. Obviously they traded for him for a reason. The guy's a very good hitter, switch hitter, plays the corners real well, and is really fitting in the clubhouse. So that would be a big blow, definitely, if they lost him for, even several weeks.
Yeah, for sure. He's a guy that seemed to fit in right away, and it feels like they've been snake-bitten a little bit with what they've done at the deadline, with John Curtis being lost for the year and probably most of next year, with a UCL injury, and now Escobar out. Daniel Norris has been a little bit better lately, so that's potentially promising. But the Brewers trying to make that next push, hit that next level, and some of the moves they've made right now just a little clouded in injury. But there is some good news. It isn't certainly all bad. The Brewers have won 8 of 9, 8 of 9 series, and really just a fly ball at the warning track away from winning all 9 here in this stretch, and 9 of 11 they've won since the All-Star break. And Christian Yelich, we've asked this question a few times, to the point that I think most people don't even ask it after 10 or 12 productive games in a row. But, is he back? Is he finding something finally? With Yelich's situation, it seems like, and Tom Hodricourt wrote about this, you guys have written about this a lot throughout the course of the year, it seems like we've ruled out that there's a physical issue with Christian Yelich. And to me, that says whether or not it's mental or mechanics or whatever, it's a situation where at some point it might just click. It might just click back into place. Whatever it was, whatever caused him to take that dramatic leap forward around mid-season of 2018, where he became just an all-world player at that point, throughout the course of the 2019 season then, that, maybe it's still in there and it's just got to click. And I'm not saying 10 games is enough proof that that's happened, but he has now hit .355 over his last 11 games. He hit a massive grand slam on Saturday for his second homer of the game. I believe he'd only hit like 3 homers at American Family Field all year to that point. Brewers fans just haven't seen those mega monster clutch home runs that they got so used to seeing in 2018 and 2019. And then he hits a big one on Saturday. We know he's not back. We can't say for certain that he is back. It's just not enough of a sample. I don't think anybody expects that they're going to see MVP Christian Yelich down the stretch, but To me, Todd, this is the most encouraging stretch we've seen from him this year. I think it is his best 10-game stretch. And you have to at least wonder, okay, well, maybe things really did click for him, right?
Yeah, I mean the positive out of all of it is that, you know, this at least to my memory is the most extended stretch of success that he's had this season. And while going at a pretty good clip here, he's also starting to drive the ball, which is the thing that's really been missing in his game. Starting to get some launch angle like he did in 2018 and 2019, that he kind of rode to his MVP in 2018 and the runner-up in 2019. That was the thing that really kind of separated him from the Christian Yelich with the Marlins, who was still a really good player, but a guy who by and large hit the ball on the ground. And that's what Christian Yelich is doing more often than not when he did make contact when things were not going real well, was just hit the ball on the ground. So if you add that in, hitting the ball hard, hitting the ball to the gaps, taking the ball the other way, starting to get the ball in the air with more regularity, and of course, driving the ball over the fence, those are all great things. And to be able to string together a stretch like this now, where, you know, he can point to some extended success, you would hope that that is going to help build his confidence. Where, I mean, you know, it's crazy to even say, but a guy who was once the best player in the National League only 3 years ago, I don't think it's a stretch to say his confidence was completely shot, you know, earlier this season. And listening to his comments and everything, and he's very self-deprecating and very critical of himself when things are not going well. I don't think that was a question. You know, his confidence was shot. And I think, like anybody, once he starts seeing more success, more extended success, you know, and you can start building that confidence, it starts building, and then you become a more productive player consistently. And certainly the Brewers would love to see that. And they don't even need to see, you know, the Christian Yelich necessarily of 2018 or 2019. Just a productive Christian Yelich, they would certainly take. You know, let's say the guy from the first half of 2018, who still was an all-star, by the way, you know, just another more reliable offensive weapon that they can put in the lineup, that they can count on from day to day. That would really make a huge difference. Another guy who came over on that same day, Lorenzo Cain. You know, we talked to Craig Counsell, after the game today about him and what he might do to help lengthen out that lineup if he were to get going. And speaking of home runs, that home run that he hit today at American Family Field, his first home run that he's hit at home since September 19th of 2019, believe it or not. So, you know, there's two guys right there that if you get them going, would be huge for the Brewers down the stretch.
Another thing that sort of intrigued me from the weekend is seeing Adrian Hauser coming off the COVID list pitching on Sunday. I'm sure Brewers fans don't want to look this far ahead, but I've already found myself thinking a little bit about the playoffs. The Brewers go into the new week with a 7.5-game lead in the NL Central over the Cincinnati Reds. I'm trying to imagine kind of how what roles guys are going to play in the playoffs, because maybe that'll inform what roles they play in September. Because another guy we saw on Sunday was Aaron Ashby coming out of the bullpen, looked pretty good. Now he's had a couple appearances in a row where he's been pretty solid. And after that disastrous start in Chicago, he looks like somebody who's going to contribute to this team down the stretch and into the playoffs. And you know, seeing Hauser and Ashby work on the same day, I find myself thinking about a piggybacking opportunity. You know, you've got two very different pitchers, one right, one left. Hauser, who's a pitch to contact guy, who you know. He hasn't quite been what he was a couple years ago, but is a guy who can certainly go 4 or 5 innings, and then you turn it over to maybe Ashby, left-hander, who's got a really devastating breaking pitch and can rack up strikeouts, and you know, again, maybe as you wrote on Sunday, maybe used similar to the way Corbin Burns was used in 2018 as sort of this a guy who could start long term but be sort of a power reliever in the meantime. I don't know what Adrian Hauser's role ultimately will be for the postseason. They've got the big three. And then I could see like a fourth starter, if it's not Eric Lauer, being like a Hauser Ashby combo. It seems like that would work. Maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe it's just Ashby's going to be here as a reliever, a middle reliever, or whatever they need out of the bullpen going forward. Tell me what you think about my theory there, and I guess what you've seen out of Aaron Ashby, and for that matter, what you think of Adrian Hauser going forward.
Yeah, I don't think you're probably too far off in guessing that. There's still obviously a lot of stuff that needs to play out between now and then, but I don't think there's any question there's room for Adrian Hauser on a postseason roster and he can do some good things for you. A guy that generates a lot of ground ball outs, and you figure by that point, he'll be back to being fully stretched out and back to full strength again after this several week pause from the COVID test, positive COVID test. So, a guy that certainly is going to be very helpful. Ashby to me is kind of a fascinating guy right now. Even a couple weeks ago, if you would have mentioned this as a possibility, I think I would have been much more skeptical. But the last couple times he's been out and he's pitched, he looked really well. He's pitched really well. He's looked really good. And today, you saw the stuff. Consecutive 99 mile an hour sinkers thrown to Juan Soto. I think a lot of the diehard fans probably saw the tweet by Pitching Ninja, where they zoomed in on Juan Soto, and Soto's face is like, okay, this kid can throw, So Lorenzo Cain referred to Aaron Ashby as filthy. And certainly, you love guys like that coming out of the bullpen. He could be a terrific weapon either as a tandem guy or, a guy like Corbin Burnes in 2018 who would just come in and pitch an inning and do his job and, match up, that sort of thing. But a lefty that can throw 99 mile an hour sinkers, yeah, I think you can make room for a guy like that if, control is always the key. And with Aaron Ashby, that's kind of the one downfall to his game right now. But if he can, get that under control, harness it, and still be able to throw those 98, 99 mile an hour sinkers, he could be a tremendous weapon for these guys moving forward. And then, off season hits, hopefully it's a more normal season in 2022 and you can get him back to being a starter. And maybe you're looking at him as a replacement for Brett Anderson.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to be fascinated to know how this team stacks up their postseason roster. There's guys like Escobar going out, definitely tweak the calculus quite a bit with, you never know what injuries are going to be there, but there's a lot of guys who are capable. I mean, you mentioned that the number of people who've been on this team, there's more than 26 guys who could easily make a postseason roster. So that's definitely something I'm curious about going forward. It's something I'll be throwing around in my head, trying to imagine as we get down to crunch time here. Another guy who really stood out this weekend, Colton Wong, with just one of the plays of the year, honestly, scoring on a pop-up, a foul pop-up down the first baseline. Realizes nobody's at home, gets in just ahead of the tag for I guess it's not officially a sacrifice fly, but it's absolutely that type of play, incredible play. And just the way that he's hit the ball lately, he's been on a tear a little bit. He's hitting, had a triple on Sunday. He's hitting for power, a lot of doubles lately. I don't know why the Cardinals let this guy go. I mean, they turned down an option that right now looks like it would be well worth it. The Brewers did get him a little cheaper than that for a 2-year deal. I think it was a $12.5 million option. They got him for about $9 million a year. But he has been so valuable, and you kind of see his personality, like sort of laying back, almost doing snow angels in the dirt after scoring from first against his old team, the Cardinals, taking a base that he stole. He stole a base off his old friend Yadier Molina, and then he steals it and walks away with it. I mean, he's having a lot of fun and he's playing supremely well. And sometimes I feel like we don't even talk about him because he's so consistent. He's battled through some injuries this year. But man, the guy's just done a lot for this team. And I honestly think if this team goes deep into the postseason, he's going to be like one of the main reasons why.
That's really, really striking when you look at the big ticket signings, free agent signings in the offseason. You've got on one end of the spectrum, you've got Colton Wong. Then on the other end of the spectrum, you have Jackie Bradley Jr., who basically is really like not even playing that much anymore. He's been that bad offensively. It's been kind of striking. But, Colton Wong, as you mentioned, I'm sure the Cardinals are kicking themselves for not exercising that option and keeping him under wraps because he's been a difference maker for the Brewers, no question. And You know, he's missed a decent amount of time, three different stints on the IL, with two times with the oblique and once with the calf. You know, you wonder where his numbers would be if he had played a full season, but you still can't complain with the production that he's put up when he's been in the lineup. You know, today again, the leadoff homer, the two-run triple that gave the Brewers a little bit of breathing room. Obviously Gold Glove defense tagging on that foul pop-up. That's a play that you're going to see once in a lifetime. I mean, just heads up, hustle. And then, like you talked about too, just a great personality, a great teammate, a guy who really seems to thrive on setting the table for his teammates and just setting the tone for his teammates. It's exactly what the Brewers needed in every facet. And, they're, for as much as they're overpaying Jackie Bradley Jr., I think they're getting a bargain and then some with Colton Wong. You know, and they've got another year. They have him under control for one more year, and then an option as well after that. So, it's a guy that you definitely would want to keep around for as long as possible, provided he's able to stay healthy and continue to produce the way he is.
Yeah, it looks doubly prescient knowing that Keston Hira has struggled and hasn't been able to stay on the big league team. Like, you know, Keston Hira was sort of cemented at second base. They bring in Colton Wong, instantly shore up that defense. And I mean, if they would have, you know, if they would have said to themselves, well, Keston Hira is the future at that position, which would have been easy for a lot of teams to say, they would be hurting right now. They would not have Colton Wong, and I don't know what they'd be doing at that spot if Keston Hira was in the same boat he is in now. So that worked out on every level for the Brewers and continues to work out. I feel like he's one of the reasons the Brewers do so well on the road. I know there's a little bit of thought that it's weird that they don't do as well at home, but on the road, I feel like, man, I feel like every inning, you know, you see Colton Wong, it's the first guy you see and something's happening, whether he's working a guy for a long at bat or he's on base looking to steal or hits a home run. I mean, it just seems like, I mean, obviously he's leading off at home games too, but just feels like he's right in your face right away, and something is already, you know, something's already happening. As far as as far as other guys, I got a couple rapid fire questions for you that we can sort of wind down with here. And one of them is Eric Lauer. I mean, we didn't see a lot of him this week. He struggled a little bit this week, but the guy has been really good. And he obviously just had a stint on the COVID IL, and he's a guy though who has several starts in a row prior to that, really, really being effective. And now I'm starting, in my mind, looking back at this trade, and I think this is sort of come under relitigation a little bit. Trent Grisham is still a really good player for the San Diego Padres, but as that Padres team slips to a point now where they are not even in the playoffs if the season ends today, they're a game behind Cincinnati, which I think is pretty stunning to a lot of people. You know, the Brewers look like they've got a pretty good deal here overall. Now, Luis Urias is about to be put into a much larger role because Eduardo Escobar is out. Urias has been solid at third base, offensively very good. Defense is sometimes hit and miss, but he's still capable of playing over there, and they're going to press him into duty here. He's been really, really good since the team acquired Willy Adames and sort of bumped him out of his normal shortstop role. So this trade is actually kind of paying pretty important dividends. If they had Trent Grisham, that's probably the best player in that trade, where they traded Trent Grisham and Zach Davies for Lauer and Urias. But at this point, I feel like the Brewers are much better positioned because they made that trade with what they're getting out of Eric Lauer and Luis Urias, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a perfect example of why fans need to let stuff play out. You know, last year, oh, Stearns is an idiot. This is a terrible trade. The Brewers got fleeced. You know, you got to give things a little bit of time to play out. And, you know, just on the surface last year, yeah, it was a bad trade for the Brewers, but you have to look at the circumstances. You know, Luis Urias had that bad luck with breaking the hamate bone in his hand. Then he had the long absence due to COVID. Eric Lauer had that funky contact due to COVID. He was out for a while. The pandemic season, it just, nothing really clicked for either one of those guys last year. And now this year, fast forward, and you've got Eric Lauer pitching really darn well, especially of late. And Luis Urias, who really, to me, is profiling as a potential long-term third baseman for this team right now, which I don't think anybody could have predicted. You know, certainly the way he's hit the ball, hit for power, He can play over there, and if he's able to work out the throwing kinks a little bit, defensively he's made some tremendous plays. He's got that tremendous hand-eye coordination that you need to have at third base. His arm is strong enough; it's just a little bit erratic. So, yeah, Trent Grisham has been really good. He won a Gold Glove. The Padres turned around and flipped Zach Davies and used him to help get them Yu Darvish, which is a great move on their part. Certainly I think the Brewers had reasons for making that trade. Kudos to them for being able to land Willy Adames as their long-term shortstop, but there certainly will be a place for Luis Urias on this team long term, and you figure he's only going to get better. He's still very young, and Eric Lauer, there's a lot of good baseball ahead of him as well. Left-hander, there's always going to be room for them as well, especially starting wise on the Brewers. They really have not had many of those in recent years. So two guys that will be in the fold for several years moving forward, and a guy in Urias who, to me, could be a building block and should only get better with age. So again, let those trades play out, give things a little bit of time, and then start judging them. It's like this rush to judgment to judge draft classes the night that it happens. I mean, come on, you got to let things play out. And in this case, fortunately for the Brewers, it's certainly become a much more even trade.
All right, a couple rapid fire questions. The umpiring is always under a little bit of a microscope. Oh, I guess always has been throughout the course of history. There was a game in St. Louis, that second game where the Brewers actually one of their most impressive victories of the year, but was an adventure for both teams behind home plate. Very massive strike zone. How would you classify the umpiring in Major League Baseball? Do you think, especially as the conversation around robo umps is happening, do you think it's worse than it's been? It's what it's always been. It's better than it's been. I mean, how would you sort of characterize it?
You're really going to ask me this question instead of Haudricourt?
Well, that's, maybe yours is a little more measured. I think Haudricourt will get pretty passionate pretty quickly, and this is a very professional podcast, Todd.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'll be honest with you. When I'm watching a game, you factor in the human element. Like, I just assume there's going to be X number of bad calls against each team, balls and strikes on the bases each game. That's just the human factor that comes along with having human umpires. I think the fact that we have all this technology at our fingertips that in a blink of an eye, we can look on our computer screens or on our phones, and we can see, oh my God, that umpire just blew that call by 6 inches. That strike three, crazy, horrible calls. Now, is it worse than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago? Honestly, I couldn't tell you. It certainly seems like people are blowing it out of proportion and making it out to be that it is. I guess I didn't follow it closely enough back then to really be able to answer that question. What I do understand and what I do get, as far as the frustrations go, is, missing calls egregiously, especially early in a count, drastically changes the tenor of an at bat. If you're in a 2-1 count, and all of a sudden, Angel Hernandez calls a ball that should be a ball a strike, that's 6 inches outside. Well, all of a sudden the count's 2-2, and a batter goes from being able to be aggressive to being defensive. Maybe swings at a bad pitch, and all of a sudden you strike out in a key situation that shouldn't have happened. And that's on the umpire. But again, short of putting in robot umpires, how do you battle that? We don't ever get any feedback as far as, how are umpires judged internally? What are the penalties if they have bad games? We see these different accounts on Twitter that are rating umpires, as far as overall score, how they call balls and strikes. That stuff's very, very interesting. It's almost fascinating to read that after a game or a day after a game. But we just don't know how they're being judged internally, and that makes it hard for me to, say one way or the other. But there's no question that there are frustrations. We see it every day, managers, players getting upset. But again, it's just part of the game. You have to learn to deal with it. To me, the bigger issue and the more frustrating issue is just not being able to figure out replay and how that's handled. Because it seems like every game there's just a head scratching play that just looks to be totally and completely cut and dry. And then you get the call from New York and it's just, the call stands and you're like, what? What are you looking at? And you never get any kind of explanation why. That's the stuff to me that I think needs to be fixed more than worrying about the balls and strikes. But there's always room to improve in any area, and certainly umpiring is one of those areas.
We haven't heard much on the labor front lately until this week. There was a little bit about a possible proposition of a salary floor in relation to a salary cap type structure where teams would be obligated to pay a certain amount on payroll. I realize that there isn't a whole lot of information available here, but just because we haven't heard much, there was, I think going into the season, this assumption that we would definitely have a work stoppage or at the very least a very tense standoff here after the current season, after the 2021 season, and that 2022, we might be facing a lockout. The fact, though, that there hasn't been much tells me maybe it gives me a little hope that because there isn't a lot of public back and forth, maybe they're making progress. I have no idea, but maybe that's misplaced optimism. I'm not sure. What do you do you still see that as kind of a foregone conclusion that there's going to be, at least major discussions of a work stoppage, or I don't know, how do you see it?
I don't know. I when it comes to labor relations between the Players Association and Major League Baseball, I'm always very skeptical. I mean, these are two groups that just have not and cannot seem to get along. And it's like every time you feel like, oh, maybe things are smoothing out a little bit, and then something happens and then things really go haywire. I don't think Rob Manfred is the favorite of anybody, fans, or the Players Association. I guess maybe the jury's a little bit out as far as owners go. Certainly he does their bidding for him the best he can, but I would say it's too early to tell at this point where it's going to go. I guess if there's a positive, it is the fact that there has not been a lot of shots fired, so to speak, between the two sides up to this point. Maybe, cooler heads will prevail, and maybe both sides are realizing that it's going to be to their best interest, clearly, to try to put their heads together and get something done. Because after the pandemic season last year, where everybody lost a ton of money, nobody wants to go through that again, clearly. And it's to both sides' best interest that they try to figure something out that works for both sides. And the players, it seems like, since the last CBA, have been hunting for their pound of flesh because they feel like they were taken advantage of in certain areas. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see, but I think I can speak for everybody in saying that I hope that it doesn't get to that point. I hope that they're able to negotiate, I guess with cool heads on both sides, and try to get something done that's going to benefit both sides. Because if there's a work stoppage in today's climate in the world with the way things are going, how long would it take for baseball to bounce back? I mean, you think back to the last work stoppage and how disastrous that was to the game. I mean, the world was not nearly as crazy a place as it is now, and people were not struggling as badly as they are now on the whole. It just would be such a bad look for everybody if they were not able to come together and get something done. So, I'm taking a glass half full kind of approach to that. Fingers crossed that they can work it out, but at the same time, whenever there's a ton of money involved, with anything, things get complicated. So would not surprise me if things went south either. But fingers crossed for a good res a fairly quick and positive resolution on the labor negotiations.
One of the last thoughts here. 2000s week was this weekend when the Brewers faced off with the Nationals, and Ben Sheets and Jeff Jenkins were in the house on Sunday. I don't mind saying Ben Sheets is one of my all-time favorite players. He's sort of an aw shucks, the Louisianan who was famous for his little quips about how terrible his offense was, but also one of the greatest curveballs in franchise history, maybe in Major League Baseball history. I think you did get to talk to him. I don't know if you talked to both guys, but you did get to see what's going on with those guys, right?
Yeah, I did. I actually spoke to both of them. I talked to Jeff Jenkins in the dugout well before the game and introduced myself. You know, he was gone from the Brewers right before I started covering the team. But of course, growing up in the area, you know, having followed the team basically my whole life, obviously I knew who he was and the impact he had on the team. And, you know, I was just talking to him about him being kind of the foundation, you know, for all this winning that's been going on in recent years. And he certainly, you know, is appreciative of the franchise and the time that he spent here and has nothing but good things to say. It's always good to see him back. And then, yeah, Sheets missed him as well covering the team, but just classic guy. I mean, just so funny. And anybody that watched that video that I shot of him today, just in constant motion and laughing. And, you know, he's got a little bit of a belly on him now. He's starting to look like, you know, he's got the dad bod going on, and just funny and engaging and just, you know, down south, the whole deal. You know, it's like he was when he was playing. And, you know, I asked him kind of half serious, you know, if he had any interest in potentially getting back into baseball at some point coaching. And he just laughed and he's like, no way. You know, he's just having so much fun living his life and being a dad. You know, his older son is in college now, his younger son, Miller, who was here and caught the first pitch from him today. He's coaching him now. And really just having fun, living the life. It's something that we all dream we can do someday. And he's able to do it, obviously, at a much earlier age than most of us. But just a good dude, and had some good funny stuff to say about, you know, Corbin Burnes almost breaking his strikeout record. But then also coming out and saying that Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff, Freddie Peralta, those guys made me feel really old when he said, you know, those guys, the way they're throwing the ball and spinning the ball, they're way better than we were back in my day. You know, back in my day, a guy that, you know, was in his heyday in like 2006, 2007, right. 2008. Yeah, long ago, right? But I guess it was quite a while ago. So always good to see those guys when they come back to town. And, you know, they certainly have appreciation for what they did, and they appreciate the team bringing them back. And I know they love seeing the fans again too. So I say bring more of them back, and we'll have some of those guys back at the end of next month with the Walk of Fame and everything, the Wall of Fame. So it'll be good to see Yovani Gallardo and Carlos Gomez.
Absolutely. Yeah, Sheets joked on the broadcast with his son Miller there that they got to change their son's name now to American Family.
Yeah.
matching up with the stadium.
Great line.
Yeah, it is good stuff. Last thing real quick. The bigger picture here for the Brewers, they're 7.5 games up on the Cincinnati Reds. You know, the biggest thing, the difference between these two teams right now is the schedule. The Reds have a very nice schedule. They have a fraction of games that the Brewers do against winning teams still on the docket. They have a pretty good handful of games against teams that are really, really bad, against the Nationals, Miami, Pittsburgh, ton of games left against Pittsburgh. So I guess you still, as good as the Brewers are sitting 7.5 up with, you know, on August 23rd, you can't feel 100% comfortable that this division is going to be theirs. How do you think the Brewers fans should feel about it? Do you feel like they should, you know, they should be calm and cool and collected, that this thing is probably still going to wrap up the way they want it to? Or, you know, do you look at the schedule and think that is a big deal?
I mean, the schedule obviously plays in the Reds' favor, but let's also remember that, you know, for all these games, we're assuming that all these series that we're assuming the Reds are going to roll through, they lost two or three last week at home to the Cubs. So, I mean, these teams, even though they're not very good, they are still stocked with players who are trying to make a name for themselves in the major leagues, on the Pirates, you know, on the Cubs, on the Nationals, as we just saw. You know, the Nationals played the Brewers really tough for three games. So
yeah, that was a great series.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, and I think a lot of, you know, we've seen it in the past too, these quote unquote bad teams take their role of spoiler seriously. And, you know, they've got young guys who are trying to prove themselves, and you've got, you know, managers who are trying to not negatively affect the integrity of these games, knowing that there's a lot riding on them. So, you know, the Reds, obviously, they've got some good pitching. They're getting their position players back. Moustakas is back. Winker's out, but he'll be back shortly. Castellanos is back. You've got Joey Votto playing like a potential MVP candidate. Where did all that come from? Where did the power come from? They've really been, from afar, interesting to watch. And, the Brewers obviously have a tougher schedule down the stretch, but they've also just been lights out with their pitching. And I just keep pointing to that. If you can get Freddy Peralta back, that's hopefully just a blip on the radar screen for him with the shoulder injury. And you can keep those guys pitching consistently well. And you've got that back end of the bullpen pitching well. Josh Hader, Devin Williams, even though he hasn't been notching those clean innings, those 1-2-3 innings, you look at his numbers and they're still really good. He's been really good, especially of late. Boxberger, unsung hero this season. Look at Hunter Strickland, Jake Cousins. Their pitching is really, really good. And if they can keep the offense going, like we talked about Yelich before, Colton Wong, if you can get Lorenzo Cain going, there's a lot of talent on this team, and I don't see any reason why fans should be worried about some sudden collapse. Getting guys that are injured back, hopefully Eduardo Escobar is not out for an extended period of time. He's obviously a key guy. I'm saying all that to say that I certainly wouldn't panic. This has been a steady as they go team. Craig Counsell running the show, running the ship. He's certainly not one to panic. He knows how to push all the right buttons. So, you can't really count all your chickens before they hatch. But I still feel like the Brewers are, in the catbird seat and in good position to hang on to that lead the rest of the way, assuming nothing crazy happens between now and then, which we don't know. Maybe it could.
The Brewers will see those Cincinnati Reds this week, starting on Tuesday. They get one of those nice off days while they're between home series, so a nice off day in Milwaukee. And then the Reds and Brewers for 3 games. The winner of that series will win the season series between the two teams. They come in at 8-8 against each other. And then the Brewers are off to Minnesota to face the Minnesota Twins. That'll be one of the last teams on the schedule that is double digits below 500. That the Twins team has been disappointing, and the Brewers have a pretty tough schedule in September coming up. A lot of Cardinals, the Giants will be in there. So these Reds games also going to be interesting. The last 3 games they have against their closest competition in the NL Central. Todd, unless you have any last thoughts, we'll send you off. Thanks for joining us.
JR, I'm good. And it's been a long time, so I just have to close by saying, always a pleasure.
Indeed, always a pleasure. He is Todd Rosiak. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. He'll be there this week for those games that I just mentioned. And thanks for listening, everybody. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review, and tune in next week. We'll be back again to talk more Milwaukee Brewers. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.